You're listening to the Governors Podcast, which is hosted by school governors, for school governors, and for all involved in or impacted by education governance. On the Governors Podcast, we have open, honest, and transparent discussions about governance in the UK education sector, sharing and providing insights into the realities of entering the boardroom, sitting around the governing board table, and leaning in.
Hello, I'm Sharon Warmington and I support schools and academies as a governor, governance practitioner and a clerk. I'm also the CEO of the National Black Governors Network, supporting the education sector in diversifying their governing boards.
And it's Olivia D. Hind here, an under 30, unapologetically black female who is changing the face and space of school governance.
And you're listening to the Governors Podcast.
Okay, let's get into today's topic.
Here's a question. Why do you govern in more than one school?
One, at the time, I had time. So I thought I could take on another one. I was asked and I thought, okay, two is my capacity. I think at the time I picked up my second one, I had to let go of my primary school. So the primary school was the first one I got a...
The first time you were a governor.
The first time I became a governor. Mm-hmm. Then I got... asked to join a secondary school that was newly changing to a new MAT structure and everything like that. And then I got asked from a different secondary school to become one, and I knew I couldn't do three. Yes. So I let go of the primary school because I liked the secondary school feel and I felt more aligned with that age group in terms of supporting that chapter of students' lives and things. And I think it's also because it was so different to the secondary school I was already in. So the two secondary schools, it gave me a wider scope, I would say, into governance, not just in education, but education in secondary education at that level. So I like that aspect. So it didn't make sense to say no. Mm-hmm. And for me, if I can't find a solid reason for saying no to something, then I don't. I find a way to do
it. To make
it
work.
To make it work and say yes. So
it's really interesting that you say that, actually, because a number of people, when they approach the National Black Governors Network wanting to become governors, unless they are a parent, they usually want a secondary school.
Okay.
That's usually the default. Until... I start to unpick their reasonings behind it and open them up to the possibility of considering a primary school, because there are more primary schools than secondary schools.
Of course, because they feed the secondary schools.
And there are more vacancies, therefore, in primary school for governors. In my experience, I don't know the data around that, but in my experience, there is more, a greater need. For people. And what I say to people is, think about it not in terms of what you perceive to be,
of course,
oh well, the students are older, so it's easier to understand, because, you know, all the subjects are specific.
Not necessarily. It can be very complex.
Well, I don't know, but what I'm saying is, sometimes the perception of secondary school is that it's easier.
That's the key word.
And that's why I say I unpick people's reasonings behind wanting to be a governor in only a secondary school, especially when they're very clear. Some will say, I'm not fussed.
Yeah.
Others will say, no, it's got to be a secondary school. And so what I govern in a primary school.
Okay.
A maintained primary school. And what I say to people who are either unsure or who say, I want a secondary school, I will say to them, consider a primary school.
Yeah.
Because remember that it's the primary school that sets the foundation.
Literally that.
On which the secondary education is built.
Yes. Because you wouldn't have a secondary school if you didn't first have primary school.
Exactly. And you need a lot of the layers, as I say, are laid there. So if you want to be involved in children's education, then in my mind, and this is a personal opinion, primary is the way to start, because if you can lay that solid foundation, or make sure that that solid foundation is in fact solid, then by the time they go into secondary, they will have that to build upon.
And the thing is, that's how, when I think of my governance journey, I started in a primary school. I did a year in there. So just
so you didn't even finish a term?
No, because it's
you don't have to answer that.
No, it's I think it's because several things were taking place, changing in that school and the, well, the academy and the academy trust it was in. And I had to make, as much as I say, unless I've got a solid reason for saying no, I try and find a way around it. If something starts to make me feel like it doesn't align with my values and my core beliefs, then I feel like I have the right to step away.
Absolutely.
If I feel that it's no longer fitting, or it goes against who I am as, and my integrity, and holding on to that. So that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, I absolutely understand that, because I stayed with a school for about 6 months and left for a similar reason. And it's important that governors understand that it's not a case of, well, if it doesn't go my way, I'm going to throw spit my dummy out. But it is making sure that you are aligned with the direction.
And you know for yourself what you stand for.
And if absolutely. And if the direction of the direction of travel isn't aligned with your moral purpose or your values, then you're going to be in constant conflict.
Exactly.
So when I'm talking to my members, I say, when you are meeting the chair and the head for the first time, make sure that you ask questions as well, because it's not a one-way street. It's definitely a two-way street, and you have to make sure that it's the right fit for you. So like the primary school that I'm in, going back to the differences, if I was to take on another school, I would want it to be a secondary, because that will then give me the balance.
Yes.
I'm very interested in FE, actually.
Okay.
Further education.
Okay. Just for anyone who doesn't know that every day.
Yeah, only because I don't know that much about it. So, you know, for primary, you usually forget about after year six when they've gone. And then for secondary, after year 11 or year 13 when they've gone. But those children are still in education.
You mean like colleges?
Colleges and universities.
And that apprenticeship structure and things.
It's still important that we operate in those spaces
as well.
And think about the whole journey of that child from early years right through to when they actually enter the workplace or the working environment. And that could be at the age of 16, or it could be at the age of 24, 25 after leaving university. So it is important that we are involved and connected to the education system throughout the entire journey.
It would be interesting to see what governance is at those higher levels. And I think because I would have done several years in secondary education governance, then it means if there was an opportunity to become a governor or whatever the title may be at those levels.
Well, it is a governor in FE. I'm not sure
what higher education.
What
might
higher
be.
Education?
I'm not sure.
What they call.
I don't know, because those are huge entities
those are
when you think of them.
Yeah,
like, literally.
Like real institute. You're going from maybe in primary, a couple of hundred, depending on how many forms of entry there are. But, you know, 250, 300 kids.
Secondary school is probably two and a half at most. Some are only 1,000, some are only 500.
And then to universities.
Thousands.
Like, wow.
Wow, So it would be interesting to see what it would be like at that level. Just to, you know what I'd be interested in? Things like how much changes in terms of career projection and career actualization for young people. Yeah. Because when you're in secondary schools, you pick your GCSEs based on the career that you're starting to think about.
Well, if you take it back a bit further, if you're in thinking primary school...
And what you want to be in the future.
Yeah, when you ask a child, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Exactly.
You know, their innocence. I love their innocence. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll have people who will say pilots. And I'm not saying that that's unrealistic, but, you mm-hmm. know, there is no limitation.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what I mean in terms of their innocence.
Anything's possible.
There is no limitation. They can be just as fascinated about saying they want to be a pilot as they do wanting
being
to
a
be
shopkeeper.
A lollipop lady.
Yeah.
You know.
It could be anything.
You know, what for them, it's like, I can see and do whatever I want.
Yeah. And then it's like as they then move through, for some, they feel like that imagination darkens or gets narrower. For some, it just becomes more targeted and focused. For others, it's like... they're heavily influenced by what their parents want them to do or what their older siblings have done. Yeah, you know, people around them have done. So you're influenced by that. You know, good, bad, or indifferent. Mm-hmm. So you've got those influences. Or it could be that there's so many more options. Or by the time you get to those points where you're starting to make decisions for yourself, your interests change or your interests emerge. Mm. You know, there's new things that you learn and stuff. Like, I know when I was in school, I was very academic. Heading books, exams were nothing for me kind of thing. Spent 12 months in Mexico City during my degree, came back as a creative and, you know, trying to get me sitting down for 3 hours to study anything. It's like, I have to really want to know what this is talking about. So there's a lot of things you go through
and that's why
and you change.
That's why it's important that around the governing body table, mm-hmm. there are so many differences.
Of course.
Because the danger is that we have same old, same old.
Yeah.
Meaning
everyone
especially,
thinks the same.
Yeah,
everyone.
Especially when we're looking at the skills audit and we still have this thing where we've got to have somebody with legal knowledge. We've got to have somebody with finance knowledge. We've got to have somebody with HR. We've got to have somebody with all these different things, which are fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But where are the creatives around the table?
And you need that.
Because it's not an entrepreneur doesn't necessarily always follow the academic route.
Yeah.
They're usually the creatives. So those mm-hmm. students who are not necessarily into... maths, English and sciences, mm-hmm. they do it because they have to, they've got no choice, mm-hmm. but they're excelling in the creative stuff,
languages,
whether it's
arts,
languages, art,
you know,
music,
all of
those kind of things, mm-hmm. and so it's important that we don't stereotype around the governing body table either.
Yeah,
because I remember, and I've used this quote so many times or reference so many times, when I was listening to Radio 4 a couple of years ago now, mm-hmm. and an A-level student, 17-year-old, she was in year 12, mm-hmm. facing the dilemma of continuing with her YouTube channel
or completing her A-levels,
but she knew that she couldn't do the two.
And I think her dad was all for her.
Her dad was like, yeah.
The YouTube channel.
Yeah,
her mum
was
like, no, finish your A-levels. School was like, of course,
finish your A-levels. YouTube will always be there.
No!
Like, no.
If you don't understand the space, don't speak on it.
And that's the thing. And that is a real challenge for a number of young people. And I know there's this perception of, you know, not everybody's going to make it on YouTube. Not everybody's going to make it.
Or people not understanding that it is a viable career for people who
absolutely.
Have got it down pat.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing, because there's real work involved.
Yes.
In I know this. There's real work involved in building a YouTube channel following and stuff. So if someone is flying in it, they're getting sponsorships, the business is being driven. Genuinely,
yes.
What more can their A-levels contribute?
Absolutely.
When they're already in it and doing it.
How can you be trying to convince a young person, a student, who may be absolutely flying in their academic studies, that what they're passionate about
is less important, is less significant than getting their exam grade.
Right.
And I understand it's like having something to fall back on. But when you think of this new generation or this current generation, they're no longer thinking about falling back.
No,
they're thinking about falling forward, yeah. Getting up and then going for it again or going for something else. There's no going back.
And that's why I have this saying that says we are preparing our children for a world that doesn't even yet exist.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have the student voice around the table,
mm-hmm.
how can we possibly set the strategic direction for that school?
And that's why I love being a governor in different types of schools. So even though they are both secondary schools, they are very different.
So what are the differences in terms of schools?
Okay, so one's a selective and one you would say is a state school, comprehensive yeah. school. They are different in terms of student numbers. They are different in terms of how they focus on academia, because obviously in selective schools, I don't want to say it's a given, but it's a given that most students are going to get the top grades. So getting 99%, 100% pass rate, that's just standard. You know, mm-hmm. They have their own league tables amongst themselves with grammar schools. Whereas in the other school, they as much as they push academia, they also look at the they encourage students in other areas because they know that sometimes or not all students will get those top grades, but they nurture mm-hmm. the skills that they have. Not saying selective schools don't, because they do. But I think when you've already got something set, you can then look at lockdown, for example. I knew coming out of lockdown, selective secondary schools would be pretty much fine on an academic level. Mm-hmm. So their students, as much as they would have experienced a lot of disruption, I think a lot of focus has been on well-being
mm-hmm.
because it's them managing all the chaos that's been in and out, because they are so used to being at the top end of their performance levels
mm-hmm.
that, you know, being in school and then out of school, it's like, oh my gosh, I may not get my A, or I may not get my grade 7 or my grade 8. Whereas in other schools, I think it's like, you know what, I'm still on track for a B, you know, so I'm gonna be good. But I've learned how to learn better. So they've been able to look at the way that they learn. So I'd say the key differences are the focus points, but also not just academia, but how the meetings are constructed. The governance in the selective school, you can see it's very, it's very like
academically focused.
No, I'm not talking about the content. I'm talking about literally how the meetings are, the actual governance of it. That's the one that's got the committee structure. So in this meeting, you focus on this. And in this committee, you focus on this.
And never the twain shall meet.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the state school, it's got more of a fluid, more conversational, flow, right. more open, discussive kind of thing. Whereas it's almost hierarchical in the selective school.
Here's a question then.
You see the layers yeah. and you have the titles and,
Do you think that individuals who choose to govern in selective schools, what am I trying to
You're
say?
You're talking about like the characteristic, yeah. the makeup of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
I can't think of the...
Okay.
Now, I should say, I've clerked in selective schools.
No, in several schools. I love all the schools I've been in. You went to a selective school.
So we've got no kind of... I love the selective school sector.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I truly believe it has a place. I know that some people don't, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are an academic, and you were an academic from birth, I saw it.
I needed to be in a grammar school environment.
I knew that you had to be in a grammar school.
Because of my personality and things.
Whereas my son was very clear, yeah. still very, very bright.
I'm not Liv.
Was definitely, no, Mom, yeah. I am not going there. I am not doing university. I am not interested in that life at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I always say to parents, know your child. Don't try and push your child into an environment that is going to be uncomfortable for them.
And not just uncomfortable, because we talk about getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. When we say uncomfortable, we mean when it's not conducive, it's not going to feed the child in the way that they need to be fed.
It'll be a constant battle.
So in that sense, we're not knocking any type of school. Yeah, we're just trying to identify or just share our experiences of the differences. So
and that's why when you're governing, when you're deciding to become a governor, or you are currently a governor, are you playing to your best strengths? Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, you can choose a governorship almost the way in which you apply for a job. You apply for a job that you really, really want.
I think it's like knowing who, it always comes back to knowing yourself. Like, I know I'm a very dynamic individual. I can operate in almost any social setting. I can be in an environment where no one looks like me and everyone's dressed up and everything. And I can also dress down and be in a room full of people who I can literally flex with and vibe with.
Yeah.
So I think me being in both the schools, in terms of like a characteristic point of view, I would say the selective school has a more suit and jackets kind of feel, and the state schools have a more like edgy, I'll see you in the city center next week kind of feel. Like, that's the only way I can kind of split them.
I understand.
And because I know I can flex in both, like I can wear joggers and I can also wear black ties, so I'm thinking I can do both.
I get you.
And so it's like I'm bringing my personality to both. So I own the fact that I did 7 years in grammar school education, then left at 18 when I was finished my A-levels, went to university, and then all the students I work with on a tutoring level, they're all from state schools, they're not from grammar school. So because of that, I'm like, okay, in the grammar school, I bring the edge. I bring, you know, something different. You know, I'm not like, it's not that I'm a rule breaker.
You make them a bit cooler.
Yes, there you go. I'm not taking that. For anyone who knows me and knows what school I'm referring to and is a colleague,
they're not pompous.
No,
at all.
I love
by
it.
I love it. I know which governing body it is, and I absolutely adore that
amazing.
Governing body.
They're amazing, and that's what I like. How different they are to me.
But
and
you've learned a lot as well.
I have. I always learn a lot. I always learn. If I go into an environment and I feel that I'm not learning something and I'm not giving something, I call it a mutual exchange of value. So if I'm giving, I'm like, okay, but I'm not receiving, reciprocating, then I'm like, okay, something's off. So it either needs to be addressed or I need to go. Or if I feel like I'm not able to give anything, but therefore I'm taking a lot, that's also something that I address. So in both environments, I feel like there's a lot of reciprocity, which I love. So I do learn a lot. I tell you, those first few meetings, it can be a bit it was a bit daunting at first, because you have all these people around the table who are just, you know, they follow the rules and you hear how they speak and how, you know, being addressed as chair. In one school, I'm called chair when I'm at those meetings of chair of teaching and learning. But in the other school, I'm just called Olivia or Liv, you know. So it just shows the different feel that it has. But I love both of them and all the governors around the table.
But it's not to say that in other non-selective settings that they're not structured and formal
and all of that. It's just the feel, you know, when you're talking about
it's just your experience as you compare the two.
Yeah.
Now, my experience, I've purposely during my clerking journey, clerked in different school settings.
Yeah, like so 5 or 6 different ones.
I've done primary, maintained, primary academy, secondary, maintained, secondary academy, selective, non-selective, faith-based,
single sex,
mixed. You know, I've purposely, and you were in an independent school as a child, so I've been part of the governance structure in an independent school.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been a parent governor in a selective school, and you know, an IEB member in a faith-based school as part of the diocese.
So would you say
what I can say,
it's enriched your knowledge of governance and education?
I purposely built my clerking career on that basis.
Okay.
Because I wanted to learn and understand from the different settings.
Mm-hmm.
And I can honestly say, without a shadow of a doubt, irrespective of what school setting you are in, good governance is good governance.
Yeah.
And poor governance is poor governance. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter the setting.
Because the principles stay the same.
The principles are the same.
If anything, being in different settings allows you to still stay interested in being a governor.
Yeah.
Because if everything's the same.
Absolutely.
Then going to those meetings and engaging with those people, it just becomes dead after a while.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that I can go to one meeting and it's the idiosyncrasies of the characters around
That's
the table.
It, the characters.
Yeah, it's the idiosyncrasies of the people around the table, the characters. Sometimes they just make me laugh with the things that they come out with.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have great personalities. And I think once you're comfortable with yourself, then, because I think we talked about it in one of our episodes about being the only one, and sometimes being the only one is new one. So, you know, once you allow yourself to just integrate and exchange and recognize that they are just other human beings with their own things that they've got going on and their own things that they bring to the table. Once you know who you are, then it's like, well, I'm Olivia, I'm Liv. Tell me about you.
Yeah, that's the thing. No matter what, and I deliver this when I'm doing stuff around training, especially around leadership,
mm-hmm.
you bring who you are to every single space that you occupy.
It's important. Very
so
important.
It doesn't matter then
where you are
because you are bringing who you are to the space. And for me, I always go along the line of not just occupying the space,
mm-hmm.
but changing the space,
mm-hmm.
but changing it for the good. You mm-hmm. don't want to change it in a detrimental way, but you want to make sure that what you are bringing to the table is valued and that it moves the organization that you're in forward. Because that's the bottom line.
So important. So what would be your takeaway from our discussion?
The takeaway would be, if I had the capacity, I would take on a secondary school. And I have actually just been asked to be a member of a trust board. Not a trustee, but the member bit, of it from the 1st of September. That's how early they've got in to get me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in holding that role.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, if you have the capacity, and in order to see things from different viewpoints, mm-hmm. if you're currently in a primary school, a maintained school, and you want to stick with primary, then go for one that's in an academy trust.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a secondary school and you're interested in knowing what children are like before they hit year seven,
mm-hmm.
go into a primary school.
Yeah.
If you have an interest in supporting children who are outside of the mainstream education,
mm-hmm.
go into an alternative provision
mm-hmm.
school. If you are faith-based,
yes.
go into a non-faith-based school.
Yeah.
So, you know, find something that's different.
It's like stepping into someone else's shoes. So it's giving you a different viewpoint, and all it does is round you off as a person because you've got more to you. It shows that you're willing to step outside of yourself. So even in knowing yourself, you step outside of yourself to consider another angle.
Yeah,
you know,
don't just sit there for term after term after term in the same school, the same meetings, the same people, because the question then is, what are you really adding?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. My takeaway would probably be see yourself as being on your own journey, very much like the children we are there to serve as school governors, as school organizations, as the education sector, who are on a journey. They have to start in nursery and then go into reception and then go into primary school education, then secondary and move up.
Mm.
You yourself are on your journey. Where do you want your journey to start and how would you like it to continue to flourish and evolve? So that would be my takeaway.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please rate, review, and subscribe via your preferred streaming platform. The Governors Podcast is a brand of the legal entity Education Governance Solutions Limited and a free training resource for anyone. So if you know someone who is interested in becoming a governor or a trustee, please share this podcast with them. And if you'd like to get in touch with us directly with questions or comments, then drop us an email at thegovernorspodcast@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on social media platforms at The Governors Podcast. Let's connect.